And good afternoon, everybody. Welcome into DVD. D-May, Svingen, Donick here on a Wednesday, May 14th. My mom's birthday, by the way. Happy birthday, Mom, if you're
watching
from afar.
Mama Donick.
Yes, 80 years old today. Ann Donick, the former Oak Ridge Wildcat from over in Oak Ridge, Tennessee, down I-40 back in the day.
The ripe
so shout out
young
mom.
Age of 80.
Yes.
Man.
Still moving. Still playing pickleball. Still doing her thing.
And she got a shot?
She can play.
She still got that shot?
Oh, yeah. She's an athlete.
So how many times, tell me this. How many times did mom go in the backyard or go in the driveway and throw up a couple baskets with y'all?
At times. My dad was more the leader in that. My mom was a really good tennis player. So she was a tennis coach. So I was on the tennis court more than anything else. But she could get out there. She can out there hoop a little bit, throw the ball a little bit. She
knock it down if she needed to.
Oh, believe me, my dad was—he had that in mind as he was courting her, asking her out. You know, like, oh yeah, she's got some game. I need to beat this woman.
We may have a future Willie Donick, you know.
That's where it all began. That's where it all began for me. Yeah.
Hey, man, ain't nothing wrong with that.
So, D-Bay, it's good to be back with you.
Oh, man,
it's a beautiful day outside.
It is. And what better day that we are back together than on a beautiful day like this?
So, we have we've been spread out across the 102.5 The Game Galaxy. We have shuffled the deck this week. We're doing a little shake up, which is always fun, shake it up a little bit. But Adam and I had a shift earlier this week for a couple days. You and I have got the next couple days, and we'll be reunited.
Reunited.
Yes.
And it feels
just like Peaches
so
and Herb
good.
Sang back in the day. That will happen on Friday. We'll be back at the regular time, regular group, and we'll take it to the bank and all that.
My demeanor's changed a little bit, man. I'm wearing sunglasses now. You know, I mean, the afternoon drive time show did something to me, man.
Yeah, get to sleep in a little bit more.
Yeah, got to sleep in. Yeah. Now I feel refreshed and got my sunglasses on. Stardom is big in a drive time show, man.
Yes.
You got to wear your sunglasses. So there you go.
Well, we're going to start
Hopefully I did Jared proud yesterday. He and Jake.
Yes.
Doing that time flopped.
Yeah.
We'll
all pick up the slack for one another. And so what we're going to do is do a number of different things today. During our show or during the afternoon yesterday, the Pete Rose decision was made. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about that a little bit later in the show. My friend Tyler Kepner, who writes, he's a former Commodore himself. He writes now for The Athletic. He has covered Pete Rose for a long, long time. And we'll talk about baseball's decision to lift the lifetime ban. Of course, Pete Rose passed away 7 months ago, so that's part of the equation here. We'll get D-Mace's opinion on it, being a guy that has been up for the Hall of Fame nomination in his sport for a long time. And what he thinks of this process, it's fascinating. Anytime you want to get some good sports talk going, bring up the name Pete Rose, and you're in.
Pete Rose, Michael Jordan, and LeBron.
Oh, yeah, those are among the topics that you always get plenty of discussion. Also, we'll talk to Jonathan Hutton at 1 o'clock today. We'll go around the horn with him in football. But we're going to start off with something a little different, a little unique. It's graduation day today over at Vanderbilt. And so this young man we're about to have on is the ace reliever for Tim Corbin's deep bullpen over at Vanderbilt. If you've been following the show, they're coming off a really big weekend series win in Knoxville against the University of Tennessee. They've got a big series with Kentucky starting tomorrow. And Sawyer Hawks is a senior on the team, and he just graduated this morning from Vanderbilt. So first off, Sawyer, I know it's really tough for you to weigh the prestige of getting your Vanderbilt diploma and coming on with myself and Derek Mason. I mean, that's a tough thing. What's bigger in your world right now?
I mean, really, it's a toss-up. I think coming on with you guys definitely takes the cake for me. It's an honor to be on. But, I mean, graduating today was awesome. So, yeah, it's been a good day.
So what was it like this morning? What was the wake-up call? What time did you have to be there? How was the speaker? All of that.
So it was just kind of it was just a baseball graduation, which was really nice. So there was only, I think there was 9 of us that graduated, including some managers and some assistants that help out around the team that finally got their degree. And it was at 9 a.m. So we had to get there about 8:15 to take some pictures and kind of run through it, get the whole ordeal, and we were out of there by 10, so it wasn't bad at all. It was a good little celebration.
Yeah, not bad. So is that the only celebration you'll do? Did you do something on a bigger scale with the rest of your graduating class? Or I know it's tough because you're juggling that and the baseball part of it.
Right. Yeah, we did a little senior dinner last night for us, where our families kind of came. Corbs gave us a little a framed jersey and a nice bat, and had some kind words to say about each of us. And the whole team was there, and they catered some food and stuff. So that's probably about the only thing we'll do. And throughout the weekend, they'll have a little pop out for a half inning and get a round of applause from the fans or whatnot, and just kind of get celebrated in that aspect. But there isn't anything, too big for us. It's kind of just we're focusing on what we got left in the season.
Now, now that graduation is out of the way for you, Hawk, but prior to that, the big series you guys had this weekend, how was that for you, being able to take two out of the three games, and it's first time you guys have taken a series from UT at their place. So how was that for you?
I had a blast. I mean, I think for us going in there, the seniors that have been on this team hadn't won a series yet against Tennessee in their time here. And for us to be able to go into their field to Knoxville and take two out of three, especially after losing Friday and then taking the next two, I think everybody was really pumped up about that. And we were all, we're all in the right mindset right now. We're all in the right place. We're just playing for the guy next to you and doing the best we can for each other. And that was, it was good to go in there and beat those guys. So
now you are a transfer from Air Force. So how has this year been for you? I'm sure it's a far cry from being on a military campus. Now you're here at Vandy. But how has it been for you this whole year?
It's been good. So I transferred over here last year, and last year I threw a couple innings and then got hurt. So that year was kind of it kind of made the transition easier in a sense, because I had a year to kind of just focus on my rehab and stuff like that and kind of get my feet under the ground where I can come in this year and attack it. And this year has been great. I mean, been throwing a lot, which is nice, but just being able to be a part of a team, especially as a senior and especially as a leader, where you can kind of take the team by the reins and make it how you like to make it. And I feel like my senior class and the guys around me, we've done a great job at creating a pretty healthy environment where we're all just kind of dedicated and focused on one thing, and that's winning ball games. And it's been great this year.
We talk with Sawyer Hawk, Vanderbilt baseball player. So what advice would you give individuals, because you've seen this, guys transferring, guys and girls transferring, getting in the portal. You hear all the good stories, but you don't hear, behind the scenes, some of the bad stories that are going on. What advice would you give to a individual that's thinking about transferring?
I think you have to know what you got to know what you want out of a school. If you're transferring to a place where you're going to play and you're going to get opportunities, and that's one thing. But if you want to change yourself, and for me, coming out of Air Force, I wanted to go to somewhere where I knew I was going to develop, I knew I was going to get better, and I knew it was going to be a struggle to pitch, just because Vanderbilt has always been this kind of, this pitching icon, right, in the terms of college baseball. So I wanted to come to a place where I knew I would be challenged. And I think when you enter the portal, you have to realize that, it's a risk, right? You're putting all your chips in and going to a different school. And, some things might not work out the way you want. I didn't want to get hurt last year. I didn't want to have to kind of experience that. I wanted to transfer over and help out the team. But you got to realize that it's a new experience in life, and you just got to take it and roll with it and go with the flow. And I think for advice, just kind of know what you want out of it and know what you're looking for.
Sawyer Hawks is with us. Vanderbilt, I call him, in my mind, a fireman. That's kind of an old school term, because closer to me means you just come in for the ninth inning in a save situation. But Sawyer, as we've seen, you come in whenever you're needed and you can finish the game. That's kind of old school, old Raleigh Fingers or Goose Gossage guys I grew up watching
right.
a lot. But I'm curious about the Air Force part of this, because that's something I'm not really familiar with. Air Force has got a really good baseball program, as we've learned the last few years. But what was that experience like? And you know, the flight part of it, and your decision out of high school to go to a place like that. What was that experience? What did that help shape you?
Yeah, I think coming out of high school, that was really my only Division I offer. So coming out of high school and knowing that, you know, this is only my D1 offer, so I need to pick a place where I can have kind of this sustained success and future that a job like the Air Force and like the military would offer. And that was kind of my mindset coming out of high school, was to go to some place that would set me up for the future. And Air Force, I mean, did that to a T. It was an incredible experience. It was challenging. It was difficult. But the lessons and the values you take from a place like that can only help benefit your life. You know, I've learned so much about hard work, about what it means to help others and push others and kind of understand a team role in that aspect. Because, I mean, as a military and as a Air Force, you know, kind of squadron that we were in, it's pretty you're just pretty focused on helping the guy next to you and helping you know, your country at the end of the day. And that was kind of something that I took from me coming to a school like this, was just being able to communicate, being able to vocalize what you want in terms of a team. And it was an amazing experience, and I really appreciated it.
This may be a really stupid question, but I am a huge fan of the movie Top Gun. This is another one of my D-mates the same age, right? We can all remember that movie first came out. But so did you fly planes? Like, what did you train for that? Was that part of it, or is that why you went there, or was there other aspects of it that, or more of the baseball part of it?
I mean, I was just going there for a good education and to play baseball, but that is something that is offered there. The summers at Air Force are broken up into different programs and different quarters. So as a freshman, you can either jump out of planes and take like a parachuting class. You can do like a flying thing where you fly little planes around and kind of learn how to do that. Or you can do RPAs, which are remotely piloted aircraft, which are like the big drones that you guys see. And I actually opted for that one just because my GPA, my first semester wasn't great. So I didn't necessarily qualify for jump and for flight. So I did some RPAs and I got kind of into that, but I don't think flying was necessarily a thing that attracted me more as just the school and the baseball, but it was definitely cool just to be around it.
Speaking of the baseball, I believe you were a teammate of Paul Skeens back in 2022. It's amazing to watch his pathway to where he was. I was just watching him against the Mets the other day pitch for the Pirates, but what was he like when you arrived on the campus with him?
I mean, he's a very steady individual. He's, you know, always been very professional, but he's a really good dude. And he was super nice to me whenever I was coming in as a freshman. He was a sophomore. And I mean, I know all of us that were on that Air Force team that were with him and played with him were super happy for him when he transferred, just because we knew, you know, kind of the talent, and we knew that he could do big things. I don't know if we necessarily knew what he'd be doing now. I mean, it's pretty unbelievable, but it's, I mean, we're super happy for him and proud for him, and he's doing awesome, and I'm excited to keep watching him grow.
So let's fast forward to this season, because it's really been fun to watch. Me as a former player for Vanderbilt, and I've watched these teams year in and year out, but this team seems pretty unique to me, Sawyer, because I think, you know, it's not loaded right now with guys that you know are first round picks hands down, like a Sonny Gray or a David Price at the top of the first round. But collectively, you guys as a pitching staff, it seems like each week you get more solidified and more confident with everybody who goes out there.
Yeah, I think we understand our strengths and our weaknesses really well, and we kind of work together, and we're all pulling for each other. That's something out there that you might not see a lot in college athletics as it is today, where, you know, if you're not playing or not pitching, you're upset. I think when somebody goes out there for us, we are excited for them to do well, and we want them to do well. And I think we all, you know, there's this kind of unity that bonds us as a staff and as a team. We're all fighting for the same goal and doing something that hasn't been done in this program in a while. We're trying to reestablish its dominance, and I think we're doing a pretty good job at it. We're playing well. So I think each time we go out there, and everybody that rolls out there on the mound has this kind of confidence that, you know, we are good, and we are a team that can do special things. So
what does Scott Brown done for you specifically? What have you and he worked on to take you to another level? Because I'm sure that's always part of it in this day and age with all the technology and the research you can do on what you do with the ball. Taking that and taking it out to the field are two different things. So how was that process for you where you've made a big leap in your career?
Yeah, Bronny's definitely helped me with a lot of stuff in terms of, pitching different pitches. I came in here with a fastball and a curveball pretty much from Air Force I was pretty raw, and he kind of refined me in a sense. I got a changeup. I got a slider now that I can all kind of throw for strikes. But I think the one thing that Bronny's definitely helped me with was developing a routine and being consistent with that routine. I think at Air Force, I was pretty much just, do some bands and go out there and throw. And that was kind of how I approached my throwing and pitching. And from Brownie, I've picked up a lot of different things that can help me in my day-to-day life that I've been able to kind of establish a routine. And it's definitely helped me be a lot more consistent.
Now, from what I'm told, you're always right in the middle of, pepping people up in the dugout, part of, rallying everybody together. I'm sure it was unique over the weekend when you play at a place like Tennessee, which is such a hornet's nest. The crowd's right on top of you. You know how much Tennessee plays with the bravado. Being able to be enthusiastic but keep that level head, that balance between – because when Tennessee plays the way they do, I don't think it's any secret that, it elicits a response. You have to figure out – what that response is going to be and channel it in the right way. So what was that like for you, both when you were on the mound and also in the dugout as you guys as a team are trying to get through this and have success?
Yeah, I think Tennessee plays with a chip on their shoulder and they have a certain way of going about things and how they act, in a sense, I think, seems to kind of want to incite you to do certain things and rile them up and continue to kind of go down their path, and we were kind of just wanting to stay with us, stay on our side, root for us, play the game the right way, and good things will come from that. So I think focusing on that as a team, and when I was on the mound, I mean, obviously I think my second pitch got cranked over the wall, and then my fourth pitch got cranked over the wall. So I was like, good Lord, I'm out here, struggling, but it is what it is.
I thought you showed some good mental toughness there, because that is where it's easy to let things unravel, but you brought it back in.
Yeah. I mean, you have to, right? You're not going to just go out there and just continue to let it unravel. I mean, you got to kind of bear down in a sense, mentally and physically, and just say, you know what, this is all they're getting. That's it. So I think going out there with that mindset, just to be able to play our game, focus on ourselves, and let the game come to us, and good things will happen.
Sawyer, we'll let you go on this, but Sawyer Hawks, by the way, is our guest. 4-0, 1.67 ERA with six saves for the Commodores here. You guys have Kentucky, and it's a big series. Kentucky's been playing really well. They had a great season last year. I know with every game here, you guys can keep working towards really good goals of being able to secure some home field advantage. So as you guys transition out of the school year, you got your graduation, what's the focus for Kentucky?
I mean, Kentucky's a really good team. It's an SEC opponent, and this year every SEC opponent is pretty amazing, and that's been something for me to realize going out there and pitching against these guys is, you can't leave stuff down the middle against anybody. They're really good, but I think for us, like I said, and I'll continue to reiterate it, we're just focusing on ourselves. We understand where we are in the SEC and in the conference, and we know as a team that a couple more wins can lock up something really good for us. And we know we would love to be at home, but I think for us, it's just getting better every day, just continuing to focus on playing good baseball and going out there and let the results kind of take care of themselves and where the chips fall and where we are in the standings and where we are for the regionals, the supers, whatnot. I think we're kind of just focused on day-to-day progression, and that's a good spot to be in, I believe.
Well, Sawyer, I know it's been a big day for you. Thanks a lot for spending a few minutes with us. Congratulations on getting the degree. Congratulations on what you've accomplished so far, and good luck in the coming weeks. Let's hope that this season's going to go on for a while, and someday maybe you can look back on your graduation day and say, hey, I remember going on a radio show with those guys. Who were those guys? Anyway, but Sawyer, good luck to you. We'll be watching this weekend.
That's awesome, man. I appreciate it. Is this Willie that I'm talking to?
Yes, this is Willie. We got D. Mace over here, too. Derek Mason, former Titan and Raven wide receiver.
Okay, that's awesome. I appreciate you guys. Also, Forbes texted me and said that he was understanding that I was doing a radio show, and he just wanted to, you know, we wanted to express that your wife, Erin, we know she's battling some cancer, and I've been through some stuff like that before, and I realize that it's tough. So, you know, that we're all thinking of you and praying for that. So I just wanted to end off with that, and thank you guys so much for having me on. It's been an honor. So.
Well, sorry, that's really nice of you to say. And Corbs and a lot of guys in your group that I know England Bryan in particular, your teammate. We've known England for a long time. He and my son played together growing up. Everybody's looking out for her, so that's it's really, really nice of you to say.
Yes, sir. Well, I mean, I really appreciate it, and I'm keeping her in my prayers, and thank you guys so much.
You got it. All right, Sawyer Hawks, he is the ace reliever for Tim Corbin and the Vanderbilt Commodores. They've got Kentucky Thursday, Friday, Saturday at Hawkins Field.
Three-game series.
No question. All right, just getting started on DVD. At 1 o'clock, we will be talking with Jonathan Hutton. And so we got a lot going on here. We've got a big night in the NBA playoffs. Last night, the NHL playoffs are going on as well. There's a big game tonight as we start to whittle the field down and move on to the conference finals. Stay tuned. You're listening to DVD here on 102.5 The Game.
Here's where I think, Willie, it's going to get tricky for Hunter. Is they're not going to pay him as a receiver and a defensive back. And so, you know, it's no different. Like, look, we've seen Jalen Ramsey. Jalen Ramsey has been one of the best corners in the NFL. Well, now he's moving to safety. He's trying to elongate his career to maximize his earning potential as a player in the National Football League. And so, look, when you play 60 snaps a game, that's very different than playing 80 snaps a game. It just is over time when you're playing a 17 and who knows, maybe an 18-game season and all of that stuff. And so as you're Travis Hunter and you look at it and you go, wait a minute, okay, so let's say he's a receiver. I'm getting paid as one of the elite receivers in the NFL, but I'm playing 45 snaps a game more than that other guy, and the average NFL career is 3 years. Like, what am I doing? Like, yes, I can do this, but is it really worth it? Look, Champ Bailey, if he wanted to, could have been played corner and receiver. He's a teammate of mine in Washington, and oh my word, like, he was unbelievable. And he did play some offensive snaps, but it wasn't many. And so, you know, I guess I would just say that, like, can he do it? Yeah, he probably can do it for a little while, but he's going to end up looking at it and say, is this really the best deal? And, you know, Will, you know this, especially in baseball. Think about the guys that, like, hey, they were catchers, right? But, hey, let's get him, you know, out from behind the dish there,
right,
so that he can play longer. It's really no different than that. And I think ultimately that will, you know, outweigh the idea of playing on both sides of the ball.
That was Tim Hasselbeck on our show yesterday talking about Travis Hunter and the practicality, the logistics of being a true two-way player in the NFL today. Not only are they going to try it, but if you listen to what's coming out of Jacksonville, remember Jacksonville is one of the smallest markets in the NFL. They're leaning into it and marketing Travis Hunter being the NFL's next star before he's ever even tried to do this. And I really wanted to get D-Mace's take on that. You heard Tim Hasselbeck. He had a really funny lead into that answer, D-Mace. And he was talking about, he called it the Jacksonville hype train, where they're hyping this up. And they're putting it out there. In fact, the headline is, why Travis Hunter, this is on the ESPN website from their beat writer, basically their Teron Davenport, why Travis Hunter is ready to become the NFL star as the first full-time two-way player in 60 years.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's putting it out there, right? Travis Hunter, I don't know if he said, hey, go ahead. I'm going to do it. Let's talk about it. Let's put it out there. Let's be about it. Tim mentioned the money part of it. Getting paid as a two-way star could be a really interesting contractual angle, which I don't know if that should be driving things.
Mm-hmm.
But give me your thoughts as you hear Tim put together. We discussed this some. If you draft Travis Hunter, what's the practicality of actually making this happen on both sides? It's not easy. But Jacksonville's not only saying, we're going to do it, but He's going to be a two-way star unlike anything we've seen in 60 years. And it's a rookie minicamp.
They said that he will push the boundaries of the NFL. And when you say something like that, that those words, you just don't flippantly throw it out there. Because, you know, you use phrases like that when you're talking about, like, worldly things or science, stuff like that. You don't hear, well, I haven't heard ever, I don't think, he will push the boundaries of the, you know, the world of the NFL. That's saying what he essentially said, because again, I've never heard this phrase used in when describing an individual, Willie. And I've been watching football, what, I'm 51 years old. I've been watching football for at least 40 years. Following him for at least 40 years. So I've never heard that phrase. And I've seen some great players, Bo Jackson, Deion.
Tim mentioned Champ Bailey.
Champ Bailey. I'm just talking about
in baseball. I brought up Shohei Ohtani, and I watched Bo Jackson as well, and Deion, who was not only a great, you know, player in different facets in football, but also was playing some baseball at the time. Those guys are incredible for sure.
The kid he's a Hall of Famer now, big defensive end that played for Carolina.
Julius Peppers,
a two-way sport. He could have played basketball on the NBA level. But he chose to go the football route. Even with him, his athletic prowess, no one has ever uttered the words, he will push the limit of the NFL. Nobody's ever uttered those words. So when you say that, I'm trying to figure out what are they really trying to do here? Because I did like what Travis Henry said at the end. He said, man, I'm just going out here and I'm playing football. I'm not setting no expectations high. You know, I'm just going out here. Do what I need to do, help the team in any way I feel I can help, and learn and develop each and every year, or learn to develop as I go. So he's like, man, I'm just coming in here. Why? In a sense, it's like, why are y'all doing this? Like, are y'all doing this for me, or are y'all doing this for y'all?
That's a huge question, I think, because I'm really wondering, as they progress with this, and as they try to figure out how is this going, Tim made the this would be a great thing to bounce off you. Going to the practicality, it might sound like a great idea. Let's use him. He's a great athlete. Mm-hmm. He's a great football player. He can do this. So let's dive all in and let's learn the offense and the defense and let's have him out there as much as we can. He was talking about how hard it is to really master the offense and all the routes and everything with every play and know the defense. Whereas, and you've said this from the start, it'd be better to be a regular defender and then learn a portion, of the offense that you can really master rather than try to know everything on both sides.
Yeah, and here, don't make no mistake about this. There's a reason why he chose to play wide receiver. They make more money. Frankly, right. No, seriously.
Yes.
They make more money on average than a defensive back does. And I'm not talking about safeties. I'm just talking about defensive backs. So he understands that I am good on both sides of the ball. I'm going to go the offensive route. Why? Because they pay me more money. I think that's essentially why he's choosing, and they get a little bit more of the glamour. You know, defensive backs ain't getting that much of, you know, airtime unless you're getting burned or you make an interception, you get an interception and running in for a touchdown, or you're just one of those very few lockdown corners that we have had, you know, throughout the history of football. But he understands that the money is on the offensive side of the ball, so I'm going to play offense. Listen, the minute you say, well, Travis Hunter can't do it, people say you're hating on him. Even if guys that have played this sport for many, many years say it's hard to do, it's hard to sustain. Not that he can do it, but is it sustainable?
That's what comes back to what you just brought up was as the Jaguars try to say, what's the maximum I can get out of Travis Hunter for the team? And Travis Hunter, what's what's my best pathway to success for the longest term at the highest level of success? I wonder how long it will be before they decide this is too much. And is it too much to start off diving into the deep end on both sides? Because as you said, there's an early benefit to it because it's going to get attention. This is a franchise that needs to sell tickets. They haven't had a lot of success. No. They need something that's going to have people say, I got to go see this guy play. Well, what better? Hey, let's see if a guy can pull it off. So that's a reason to do it, but that may not be the best thing for both sides long term. Same thing with Travis Hunter. If I'm getting attention for this, if I'm doing something that hasn't been done basically in three generations, that's going to be good for me. I'm going to get attention for that. But if you burn out, like Bo Jackson was doing fine in both sports for a while, but his body couldn't hold up.
Exactly. He ended up getting hurt. And I know it was a freak accident with Bo, but I think eventually he would have had to choose one or the other. He was going to have to do it because that's why Deion Sanders eventually chose one over the other,
right?
Because the back and forth, is you just can't do it, not at that level. So, but we're talking offense and defense. My thing is, listen, I think the young man's going to be a very good player. Can you, you know, if it was up to me, I would have him play defense and I would give him 15 to 20 plays on offense. And if he's rolling or if our defense is getting three and outs, then I may implore him more on the offensive end. But that is dictated game by game. It's not, oh, we're going to play you 40 plays here, 40. No, it's going to be, how's this game going? Okay, we're doing good on defense. We're beating the team by, you know, three touchdowns. Let's put him on offense more now, you know, and kind of save him for the defense. We don't want you tackling anybody or all this other stuff. We'll save you on defense. I think you can do it in that manner. But if you try to implore this, oh, he's going to play, you know, 50 snaps on offense and 50 snaps on defense. Yes, he can do it. But for how long? Again, guys in the regular, like just the regular person out there watching television and watching a game, those that haven't played the sport, they don't understand how hard it is from the college level to the NFL level. Some guys have made it look easy. I get that. But I am talking about the war of attrition. When we get into week 8, 9, 10, your body starts to break down. You can do – I've seen – man, Eddie George did just about any and everything to get himself ready. Ray Lewis, all those guys. But at the end of the game, they were beat up. Didn't matter. And it took them days. Why do you think they give us – we don't practice on Monday if we have a Sunday game. We don't practice on Monday. It's a shakeout. We don't work on Tuesday. And then Wednesday, they try to ease us back into it. Ask any player. It's not until Thursday till our bodies start really feeling good. And then Friday is like, okay. But then Friday is a tailored down practice. Everything is sliced down because it's Friday. It's third down day. It's red zone day. So everything is tapered down. We're not out there as long. So it takes you until Thursday to get your body back so you can play the next following week. And that is if you don't have an injury. You just been beat up. People don't understand that, and I don't understand. I get why, because if you haven't done it, it's like, oh, it's easy. He did it in college. The step from college to the pros is a big step. That's why I take guys 2-3 years to develop.
So two things to this, and I want to get some feedback on this from our listeners. 615-737-1025. Call or text our phone text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. A, do you think he can do it? B, for how long? And then the other part of this is if you're a Titans fan, you're probably hoping this doesn't go right. You know, you're probably hoping they do everything Jaguar style. Go in, hype it up, overhype it, overpromise, underdeliver, and they have to decide which side of the ball he's better off playing on. Maybe he doesn't like it. Maybe he gets in the contract. So, I mean, these are all things that if you're competing against them, you don't want him to be that one superstar, never-before-seen guy. It remains to be seen if they can pull it off. But we're all curious. So what do you think? 615-737-1025. D-Mace, Adam Ving, and Willie Donick presented by Bet365. Whatever the moment, It's never ordinary at Bet365. Your calls and texts on this. When we come back, Jonathan Hutton will weigh in at 1 o'clock. So stay tuned. You're listening to 102.5 The Game. Oh, this is a classic right here. David James knows how to get our attention with the music coming back. This is DVD, 102.5 The Game.
The Beastie Boys.
Oh, yeah. Who didn't have this tape in the mid-80s? Along with...
I had the CD with the back of the airplane. Oh, that was
everybody
so
had it.
Everybody had it.
And then there was the Run DMC with It's Tricky.
Yeah.
UB Illin was on there.
UB Illin.
Not to be confused with the Beastie Boys' License to Ill, which everybody had the tape. But those were the two go-to tapes.
Yes.
I told you about this guy, Jared Bowie, one of my good friends in high school. He knew every word to every song on both of the albums. And during our history class, he would like whisper the lyrics, and the teacher had to say, "Jared, we got to get some work done, man." I would be sitting next to him. I'd be laughing, and I was like, "Jared, we got to get our work done, man. Come on. You're killing me."
Oh, man.
But here's a news piece that we just came across.
Mm-hmm.
The Ravens have re-upped with Derrick Henry. 2 years that averages $15 million per year.
Mm-hmm.
The most ever for a running back over 30 years old. So once again, we just talked about Travis Henry. Mm-hmm. They're hoping in Jacksonville that he's a guy.
Travis Hunter, you mean?
Travis Hunter. Travis Henry. I'm mixing the worlds of back in the day. Travis Henry was a pretty good running back back in his day. Not Derrick Henry. Travis Hunter, they're hoping, is that guy who is different than anybody else. Just a different bird. Time will tell.
Mm-hmm.
Derrick Henry, especially last year, I knew he would do well. I did not think he would dominate the way he did. And now they've got him for 2 more years. They have a vision of how to use him. They have Lamar Jackson, who offsets the pressure that they put on him. Mm-hmm. It could not have worked better for the Ravens, other than not winning the playoffs, right?
Yeah.
But now you can see him having 2 more big years.
Yeah.
I can see that. Whereas when he left here, I thought he's going to do okay. He's going to be on the right team. But I didn't think he would be this impactful.
Well, I knew by him going to Baltimore, that offensive line was much better than it was here. And I'm not saying that, you know, throughout his career he had a bad offensive line, because he didn't. He had one of the best offensive lines that have ever, you know, been assembled here in Nashville. But toward the end of his career here, the offensive line wasn't as good. But I knew him going to Baltimore, it was, you knew he had a lot left, but his you know, it just came to an end here. The team wasn't going anywhere, so he had to go somewhere to hopefully win the Super Bowl. And he landed in a place that has been very good to former Titans. So he's going there. And what – this is why I knew – one of the reasons I knew he was going to have some success outside of the organization and Lamar. They didn't ask him – he didn't have to be the guy that win games for him. He didn't have to shoulder the load of the team wins each and every week. He had to do that here. And I think that would have ran him down quicker than anything, because they would have just rolled his back until they couldn't do it no more. It's not like that in Baltimore. He's one of 3 or 4 guys that helps them win. And then the bulk of it is on the shoulders of Lamar Jackson, where it rightfully should be. So he can go in there each and every game and play football, and don't have to worry about, oh, man, if I don't have a 100-yard game, then we're going to lose. Or if I don't have, you know, 2 touchdowns or 150, we have no shot at winning. It's not like that in Baltimore. So you're able to preserve your career. So we were discussing it, and maybe we can discuss this with Hutt, too.
Yeah.
You know, can Barry Sanders, I mean, can Derrick Henry get himself within the top five, that atmosphere only 5 guys are at right now? Can he get himself inside that 5? Can he drop the great Barry Sanders from the number 5 spot and make him number 6?
That is a great question that I would have thought the answer would have been no. When they left, when the Titans moved on from Derrick Henry, I felt, and I still feel today, that was the right time to move on at that stage of his career and at that point in time for the Titans. I thought that was the right thing to start a new chapter. And it wasn't that I thought Derrick Henry was washed up, but I did. I would have been lying if I told you I thought he could get 1,921 yards. His last year with the Titans, he had 280 carries, which led the NFL. He had 325 last year, which is more like how the Titans were using him. So they, I didn't think he would have that many carries for the Ravens.
But I don't think it's necessarily.
Was it more
carries.
Like stress free carries?
Yeah,
that,
I think that's what
that
it was.
Is that a way to put it?
Yes,
like not as much,
exactly.
Not as many punishing carries?
Absolutely, because everybody understands that. Listen, we got to worry about Lamar too.
Yes.
And it's not like, you know, Derrick's in the backfield, so we need to 100% put our attention toward Derrick in the run game. No, we got to watch out for the quarterback. He didn't have that luxury here in Nashville. It was him in the backfield, and it was the team paying 100%. Attention to him in the run game. It's not like that in Baltimore. So it's sort of stress-free, as you would say.
As we set the table for Jonathan Hutton, we'll lead with this topic for him. He's got 11,423 yards, and he ranks 19th all-time in just straight-up yards. Mm-hmm. There was a time where I thought, you know, borderline Hall of Fame needs more. So he's got that. He had the other big year. I think he's now very much in the Hall of Fame discussion.
Yeah,
Even if he didn't play again, I think he'd be in the discussion now that we know he's very likely to have another year or two with some production. The question is how high. You mentioned Barry Sanders. He's fourth at 15,269. And we know Barry Sanders could have kept going.
Yes.
He could have kept going. He stepped away when he was still
after
really
10
good.
After 10 years.
Yes. Then you've got number three is Frank Gore at an even 16,000. Frank Gore.
Frank Gore played like 18 years.
Yeah.
2005 through 2020 for five different teams. His big thing was he didn't blow you
Close
away with a lot of great individual seasons, but he always was contributing for somebody. And so over time, the volume was there. Then you have two all-time greats, Walter Payton at number two, who held the record for a long time, 16,726, and then Emmitt Smith, who passed him. 18,355. It's a stretch if you think Derrick Henry is going to get up into that echelon, but he's going to pass a lot of people. Even with in the next year, he's going to shoot up into the top 10.
Yes.
Because we know if he has any kind of year, he's going to have another 1,000 yards. Mm-hmm. That's going to move him way up there.
But if he has another
monster year and then another good year on top of that, we're talking top five.
Yes. And then if we were joking, you know, if indeed, because I think he's a Hall of Famer now. Now, will he get in first ballot? Probably not, but I think he's bona fide Hall of Famer. You just look at his career. He's been the best runner of the football since he became a starter with the Titans in the NFL. I'm not saying he's the best running back, but he's the best runner. But if you look at it, if he reaches that threshold of that number five. He pushes Barry down to six. He jumps to that number five.
Sanders is four. Adrian Peterson is
five.
14,918. So
he will
if
push
he
Adrian
could
Peterson
get
down.
To 15,000,
yes,
that would be top five. Now, that would be 500
and
change.
Yeah.
3,500 and change. So 1,700 a year?
Yeah.
No, there's nothing that says he can't play after, you know, two more years.
Yeah.
That's what Emmitt did. He padded. He wasn't a great running back. He was with the Cardinals, remember? But he got extra
yards
doing
that. He did have 1,000 yards with the Cardinals, didn't he?
He might have, but he was out there. He was getting yards.
He played for, two seasons?
He passed Walter Payton when he was still on the Cowboys, right?
Yeah.
Wasn't he still on the Cowboys when he passed
Walter
Payton? Or was he with the Cardinals when he passed?
Yeah, I think it was with the Cardinals.
Hold on.
Okay.
It may have been the it may have been the Cardinals.
Emmitt Smith played 2 years with the Cardinals.
Uh-huh.
And he had 256.
So he did have.
No,
and then 937.
Yeah, the 937.
At a 35. I think he had already passed. I think he passed Walter Payton
in Dallas
in 2002 with Dallas.
Yeah.
I think.
So I'm looking at it. He has 2,000 more yards than Walter. So I would think it
so
was.
So he did it when he was with the Cowboys. That last year with the Cowboys, he did it. And then they released him.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when he went to Arizona. But if Derrick wins a Super Bowl, and then he gets into that top five, he's first ballot Hall of Famer. He's definitely a first ballot Hall of Famer. But then you ask the important question, the pivotal question. He wins a Super Bowl. He's first ballot.
Does he retire?
Yeah, people don't want to hear it.
That would bring up a sore spot.
If he gets to a Super Bowl or wins, well, it would be win the Super Bowl, really. But if he gets to a Super Bowl, yeah. Yeah, that's going to be a question. that's going to be a question. Yes.
All right, we'll ask that question to Jonathan Hutton when we come back. We'll talk some football with him. We'll even mix in a little Tennessee-Vanderbilt rivalry with him as well. We've got a lot to talk about here on DVD. And so you're listening to 102.5 The Game. Remember, we're broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service.